Winter storms are disrupting travel today on one of the busiest travel days of the year. AAA says 55 million people traveled more than 50 miles this year for Thanksgiving, and hundreds of thousands did so on Amtrak trains. Now, the U.S. government owns Amtrak, which is on track to break even for the first time ever next year. I spoke with Amtrak CEO Richard Anderson about that. He said the numbers have been moving in the right direction for some time.
We did improve to the best operating performance in history. We had an operating loss, $29.8 million, which was an 82% improvement over last year. And I think over the past 5 years, we've reduced the operating loss close to $400 million.
We talked about a lot more than dollars and cents in our interview. I asked him how he's approaching his relationship with Congress, a boss he didn't have to deal with in his last job as the CEO of Delta Airlines.
We've approached the relationship really by having credibility in doing what we say we're going to do, being able to be good stewards of the resource by having credibility on all the safety issues, by running a good railroad, by growing the ridership. Those are, I think, the most important parts of stewardship of this great asset.
One of the biggest points of the contention that you seem to have with lawmakers are these long-distance routes. Some senators have actually held up confirmation hearings for Amtrak board nominees because they're worried about your plan for the Southwest Chief, which is the route from Chicago to L.A. Last year, you wanted to break it up and replace nearly 500 miles of that route with a bus. Congress has so far forced you to continue the existing route. Is cutting back that long-distance service still a priority for you?
Well, we think the network needs to morph, but, you know, on that particular route, we have over $100 million of investment that has to go into that route because we operate over a railroad that is no longer maintained by Burlington Northern Santa Fe, and it is an antiquated piece of track. So if we are going to have the same safety standards and quality standards, that's just a lot of money to put into a stretch of a railroad that has, I think, 7 people that get on and off a day on that little stretch. So what we were trying to be is good stewards and offer good answers. Perfectly happy to take the direction of our owners. We're working hard to grow ridership. And in fact, the long-distance network last year had a nice year of growth compared to history. And we project next year we're going to be quite aggressive about growing ridership and making investments in that. But everybody needs to understand those 15 routes take about $1 billion cash a year from our congressional grant. And we know there will always be an important place for the long western overnight trains, but there are a handful of those routes that are not even 7 days a week, that are 3 days a week, that could be put to better use serving more people, because what we're supposed to do is serve people in America in an efficient, safe way. And we're merely trying to take a railroad design, and the railroad design we have today is really one from the 1920s, and understanding that Americans live in a very different way. And all the growth in our country has come in urban corridors like the corridor from Boston to New York. And we want to be able to serve that and be relevant, because if we're going to deal with congestion, growing population, and the carbon footprint of automobiles, Amtrak is the best answer for inner city transportation in a 200 to 300 mile market.
Well, could you do what airlines do with unprofitable routes, which is basically tell the federal government or members of Congress, look, if you want to subsidize this particular route, go for it, but it's not part of our core business?
Well, no, that wouldn't be appropriate for Amtrak, because we have a statutory responsibility to provide inner city travel. We also have a statutory responsibility to minimize losses and run this like a business. So we're at an intersection of both a really important public policy role and the responsibility to be very good stewards. So we have to have good answers for rural communities. So we take that challenge. But the reality is that probably 90% of the people that get on a Amtrak train travel under 300 miles. There are only about 170,000 people a year that take a long-distance train end-to-end. But they're a very vocal group of people that, you know, have this sort of historic view of the beauty of going 45 miles an hour on a train for a couple of days.
Have you ever taken one?
Yes, I have. I took them as a kid, too. My dad worked for the railroad. So, yeah, I have. And it's enjoyable. It's just that most of us in this day and age, you know, air travel is cheaper and faster than the long-distance service. So if you avail yourself of the super low-cost carriers in America, you can get to Seattle for probably around $100, $120 at most on an airplane, or take 2.5 days and a higher fare to go on the train. So it's got to be experiential. And that's where we think we should make the investment, that there are these really sort of legacy long-distance routes that are almost like a part of the Smithsonian, that we should do a much better job with fewer of them, because we're going to need to buy all new equipment. And that bill is going to start with a B. So we're trying to weigh the demands to continue to serve those communities with a limited number of dollars for a railroad that has a $40 billion backlog of state of good repair investments that are necessary.
Speaking of the joy of taking trains, you recently decided to eliminate dining cars on some of these long-distance trains. You say that's because of changing consumer habits, especially millennial habits. I have to say, as a millennial, I took a train in Switzerland, and my favorite thing about it was the dining car. The food was amazing. Why not just make the experience better and make it as expensive as it needs to be instead of getting rid of the dining car?
Well, making it as expensive as it needs to be is a challenge. I mean, it is still a product that has a supply and demand equation to it. And so the issue is on the single overnight cars, right? Single overnight. The double overnight cars still have two dining cars, a cafe car and a dining car. On the single overnight cars, we want to go to a single dining car instead of two dining cars, and provide a much more flexible and higher quality food that can be eaten in your room, eaten in the cafe car, and that we give equal access. Remember, the dining car is only for a sort of an elitist institution in that sense, in that it's only for people that can afford the sleeping car accommodation, which is a very small number of people on Amtrak. And they like the exclusivity of having their own dining car. I'd like a more egalitarian situation on the single overnights, where we operate a single car and it serves the coach people and the sleeping car people with a much more modern food offering.
I want to ask you just a couple final questions. Private rail competition. Virgin wants to operate a train between Miami and West Palm and soon Orlando. Are you worried about private rail as a competitor to Amtrak?
No. I think it'd be wonderful if we could have as much rail in this country, because, you know, our mission and policy is to advance inner city rail. And I think that's good. It's good. It's interesting being at Amtrak because it's so complex. On the one hand, you have a policy consideration to provide inner city passenger rail mobility and minimize government subsidies and achieve maximum productivity and efficiency. So we have all these obligations, with the end goal being to advance inner city rail transportation. If Virgin can do that, that's great for Amtrak.
You're on track to introduce the new high-speed trains on the Northeast Corridor by 2021, which will completely replace the Acela trains. How fast will it be to get, let's say, from Washington to New York?
Well, we should get speeds up in some sections to 160 miles an hour. And we want, you know, Washington to New York to be sub 3 hours.
You took this job on a 3-year contract for zero salary. Do you expect to stay beyond those 3 years?
You know, that's up to the board of directors, really. it sounds corny, but, I was really fortunate to sort of not have a very good education and be given the kind of opportunities that I was given in, being from this country. And so all I wanted to do was figure out a way in retirement to do some sort of service since I'd never been in the military. So ultimately, the board will decide what's in the best long-term interest of Amtrak in terms of continuing to sustain the progress the team has made, because we've pretty much hit every goal on finance, capital investment, safety, customer acceptance, ridership, operating earnings, balance sheet, positive train control, just go down the list. So we want to have continuity regardless of who's sitting in this chair against those goals, so that we are good stewards of the mission of Amtrak and the assets and funding we're entrusted with by Congress.
That is Amtrak Chief Executive Richard Anderson. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Jeremy.